Thank you for having me here today. My name is Sean Flynn. I'm a professor at American University, and I have the good fortune to be representing no one today, so I can give you just kind of an outsider's perspective on this agreement, not tainted by any client interests. I will start off. There's a meeting that I was at hosted by some labor unions the other day, and each of the speaker began their presentation by recognizing that they were standing on ancestral lands and appreciating the elders, both past and present. And I'd just like to associate myself with that remark. I wish we did the same thing in the U.S. to remind ourselves from where we come. So I want to speak today basically in direct opposition to the idea that what's being called the FTA template should be the starting point for the IP chapter in this negotiation, and specifically that ACTA should be the starting place for the enforcement chapter. I've been speaking on this theme previously and pointing out the opposition between the U.S. proposal and the development agenda in WIPO and multilateral forums, that the economic interests of each of your countries, including the United States, but especially in developing countries where the problems of monopoly pricing are even more severe. The research base for some of these ideas pointing to the problems, for instance, of media piracy are problems of pricing, not lack of enforcement measures. But today I want to talk about the politics of this agreement. And the politics starts off with a huge process flaw, which is that this is not really a 21st century agreement. This is just the latest extension of the 1980s. That the new players who are most affected by this agreement are new into this politics and are not spending the same amount of lobbying resources that the big media industries are. And so you see an agreement that is shaped almost entirely to the interest of one sector of the U.S. economy. And that sector is adequately represented within the structures of the U.S. system that advises trade policy. So if you look at the formal advisory system that gets access to the ongoing text that the rest of the public is denied, you will find heavy representation of pharma and media content, one ISP. And it's not Google or even the industry representation, it's Verizon, a legacy player from the telephone industry. But now you have not only this process flaw to appreciate, but the fact that this agreement is facing a social movement. And that, I would call to you, calls for an adjustment in the agenda of this agreement. So since the last time you formally met in Lima, the internet went dark, as Jonathan Band talked about today. But also there has arisen a large and active social movement against ACTA. That movement started to some extent in Poland, where people took to the streets on the day ACTA was signed and remained on the streets continuously, over 10,000 people every day, until the Polish government responded. Responded not only by withdrawing itself, but advising the rest of the EU to reject ACTA. The movement then shifted to Paris, where again tens of thousands of people took to the streets, Stockholm, where MPs and thousands of people took to the streets in negative 20 degrees Celsius weather to oppose this agreement. And then to February 11th, a global day of protest, where hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets all over Europe, and smaller numbers in the US and Mexico and other TPP member countries. Hundreds of thousands of people have been marching, sometimes every day, against this agreement. The official government responded. The EU Parliament's rapporteur on ACTA resigned, as did the Slovenia ambassador to Japan, who signed ACTA for Slovenia on orders of her government, and the next day resigned, apologizing both to her country and her children. A wave of countries withdrawing from ACTA or suspending their deliberations followed. Bulgaria, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Germany, Latvia, Poland, Cyprus, Romania. And the EU itself then announced that it also was suspending the ACTA agreement by referring the matter to the EU Parliament to answer the challenges that were brought that this agreement violated human rights, Those arguments were made by the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights, or for the Freedom of Expression, I should say, as well as in an expert opinion by several human rights academics commissioned by the EU Parliament. And the issues there are incredibly serious. This is an index from the Special Rapporteur's report highlighting the human rights problems with the arbitrary blocking or filtering of content, with the criminalization of legitimate expression by reducing criminal thresholds, etc., which you find expressly in the TPP proposal and in ACTA itself, with the imposition of intermediary liability. This is a very new issue within the international trade realm. And in one way to look at it, it's imposing liability for the sidewalk owner for the actions of the people speaking on the soapbox upon it. This has very direct human rights implications for freedom of expression interests, disconnecting users even without any judicial finding that they have done anything wrong, inadequate protection of privacy and data protection. These are all issues heavily covered under ACTA and frankly expressed in spades in the US TPP proposal. The TPP proposal is clearly modeled on ACTA. We will be putting out this report towards the end of this week, going section by section through the US TPP proposal. And it is clear, as the Chamber of Commerce noted today, that it is not only based on ACTA, but goes far beyond it in almost every provision. ACTA, for instance, was criticized, and part of the mobilizations in Europe were around the idea that it was globalizing the DMCA. TPP proposal actually does. ACTA was much more vague on that process and policy. And even in the US, you see ACTA being called more dangerous than SOPA. Why? Because it's going on in an international negotiation. Whatever is cast into this agreement is essentially cast in stone, removing from your domestic political policy the ability to change it. And so the attention that has been directed at ACTA and SOPA and PIPA is now finding itself directed towards TPP. You are now in the window of this attention. These are figures, for instance, from the last unofficial, unannounced round of IP negotiations, which took place in Los Angeles. The Twitter hashtags on TPP, mentions of TPP, approached 20,000. Some of those days. You're not yet at the level of ACTA, so ACTA has been averaging about 20,000 tweets a day and peaks out at about 100,000. So this is what a social movement looks like. You're just on the cusp of it. But the attention is still there. And so the question is, what are you going to do about it? And I would encourage you not to ignore the social movement, but rather to respond to it. So you have two major complaints that are rising. One is process, one is substance. In the process, this negotiation is worse than ACTA. So the secrecy around this negotiation and its formal memorandum extends the confidentiality of the agreements until 4 years after the final negotiation of the agreement. And de facto, we actually had access to ongoing ACTA texts after every negotiating round through a series of leaks. So I would encourage you to think seriously about renegotiating the process for this agreement. You might take the EU Parliament resolution of March 2010 as a model, which demanded that EU begin an ongoing release to the public of negotiating texts. It would go far to help you respond to some of the inaccuracies that I've heard people mention that's going on around the perceptions of this agreement. You can't respond to those if you keep it in secret. You could go further, of course. So the Polish Prime Minister, after the uprisings there, actually had a 7-hour consultation with the internet. I think this is an extremely interesting proposal. You could try to use actual 21st century processes to negotiate your 21st century agreement. You're not now, so you're negotiating what you're calling a 21st century agreement with very 19th century processes, the idea that a country club of countries should decide the standards that intend to be globalized to the world and to do so in secret. On the substance, if you want this to be accepted by the same people who are rising up on the other side, you need to change the framing around this agreement. This agreement can't be another instance of ACTA telling internet users what they cannot do. There are real issues that need to be addressed telling users what they can do. Some of these have been mentioned by CCIA and some of the other groups here. You can take your ideas from the academic community. So Yochai Benkler, one of the leaders in internet law and thought, Harvard Law School. I associate myself with this quote by him, that the starting point for this negotiation cannot be that everything that the industry got while the network citizenry was weak and dispersed is sacrosanct, and the only things on the negotiating table are Hollywood's shiny new regulatory tools. The politics have changed. Everything should be up for renegotiation. Some of his ideas, actually reinstating the Sony doctrine to Grokster, the opposite of intermediary liability, decriminalizing, not increasing the criminalization within copyright, fair use defenses to anti-circumvention, and reining in this international pathway where these laws are made at an international level through secretive processes. Public Knowledge just released what it's calling an internet blueprint with many of the same themes last week. MSF and other groups would actually say, don't just take this back to TRIPS on the standards of protection enforcement. We need a real discussion about how TRIPS needs to be changed. And the starting point that I'm most familiar with was a group of 200 academics and IP experts from 35 countries and 45 universities got together and crafted the Washington Declaration on Intellectual Property and Public Interest. A couple of the common themes included in that doctrine, which included many of the other proposals that I have mentioned, the need for strengthening of limitations and exceptions, especially in the copyright sphere and especially in the digital environment, and checking enforcement excesses. There are real problems with people being penalized and information being taken down off the internet without adequate due process. These are areas that could actually use global standardization. On the issue of limitations and exceptions, we had a meeting with about 30 IP academics from around the world in Amsterdam this last December, and we reviewed a host of target countries to look at their limitations and exceptions regimes. And what we found is that very few of them had clear and appropriate exceptions for some of the most important public interest uses and free expression uses on the internet today. User-generated content, the X mentions that it's fairly clearly illegal under their current law. The plus represents that it's fairly clearly legal. Only Israel, a country that recently amended its law towards the fair use position, came out affirmatively on all these counts. These are real problems. If your copyright law does not allow user-generated content on the internet or the digitization of library works, you have real problems, both to trade and public interest within your community, that could be addressed. So taking that development agenda slide that I started off with and pushing it into a positive proposals, there are things that you could do that you could include into this agreement that would respond to this call for positive proposals. On multilateral decision making, you could actually ban unilateral adjudications and special watch lists as a way of enforcing trade policy, require limitations and flexibilities, and require due process. Apologize for going quickly through and for running over. All of these comments are on our website, infojustice.org, and you can find the various links to the documents that I've quoted there. Thank you.